How are you viewers doing out there? I hope you're well. We're well. Now, I know we've been silent for a little while, but that's because we've been working on a new project, which we're tentatively calling Dude Quest. So without further ado, here's a teaser sample for the upcoming prologue episode. Enjoy. The storm was not uncommon for the waters known as the Sea of the Fallen, named after the resting place of the physical bodies of the gods. The 13 islands that mark the realms of mankind were notorious for their fierce waters, and even fiercer weather, especially the further north one went. What was uncommon was the solitary rider cutting his way through the dagger-like rain and splintered bolts of blue lightning. The form of Inza Sturm was barely visible in the evening murk, and the storm wasn't helping, but the Drak knew the way to its ancestral roost by instinct. Draks were large beasts to begin with, and this one dwarfed his kin. Its long serpentine body cut through the storm, and each beat of its blanketing wings propelled it closer to their destination, Castle Tidegar. Bolt cracked close, illuminating the dark sky and reflected off the inky churn below. For the briefest of moments, Inza Sturm came into view, his childhood home. The bolt awakened something in the beast, and it let out a cry, joining its voice with that of the storm. He leaned forward in the saddle and placed a reassuring hand against the black scaled hide of his mount. It lowered its arrow-shaped head, tucked its powerful legs against its body, and doubled its efforts to close the shrinking distance between it and its destination. The beast's forelegs, if you could call them that, grew up and out and were connected directly to the membranous tissue that comprised its wings. Drox were volatile beasts, known for their independence and ferocity. They could be tamed, but at tremendous risk and with tremendous skill. Each rider was bound for life with their respective mount. The beast would only accept and respect the rider who dared to tame it. This undertaking was only attempted by prospective members of the Sturmgewehren, the elite, the Royal Guard. It was their final trial. The rider was now low over the southern portion of Inza Sturm. The island was an island of stark contrast. The southern portion consisted of broad plains that sloped into the lapping waves of the sea, and it rose steadily toward the northern end, which erupted into stark wave-worn cliffs of jagged salt-stained stone. It was on these cliffs, and the highest point, the castle rested. He moved his feet within the latticework of straps that held him to the beast. Recognizing the specific motions, the drop flattened its wings to its dart-like body and dropped low over the island, only coming out of the dive at the last possible moment, plunging the rider's feet beneath the surface of the sea. It traced a coastal path until coming to the cliffs and curved around them, using the powerful updrafts to shoot vertically toward the castle landing. Rider and beast worked together to navigate the treacherous paths of air. One wrong current, and they would be shattered against the unforgiving knives of the cliff, their failure forever cast into the sea. The rider was alive with fear and concentration. Normally, he would have taken a leisurely flight over land, but he needed this night, this storm, this landing. If he was to rule, he would need the respect of his people, his warriors. They would respect this trek. He only had to avoid failing. But without their respect, he might as well dash himself against the rocks and avoid the slow, agonizing weakness of his father. With one final gut-churning roll to a more favorable current, man and beast shot above the cliff wall, above the landing, and above the awestruck cadre of guards stationed below. They raised their tridents in salute, but their cheers were lost in the throat of the storm. They hung there for a moment before dropping onto the landing with a thud. The Drock bellowed in triumph, feeding off its master's exhilaration. Bits of the beast's saliva fell from its mouth, splattering and hissing against the landing stone. Drocks possessed acidic saliva which they could project in defense or when hunting. The rider worked to undo the straps holding him to the beast and slipped to the ground below. The Drock arced its head around to the rider and dropped it low. The rider reciprocated and touched its forehead to the massive creature, the only gesture of respect used by the Drock.
"Thank you, Yorm,"
the rider said. The moment was over. The beast snapped its head at the approaching guard and bared hooked teeth used for catching its aquatic-based diet. Its eyes danced red from the coals of the braziers along the wall, revealing the strength of the beast's sight, for it regarded the world in terms of heat. The rider held up a black-gloved hand, telling the guard to approach no further. Normally, servants would see to a mount. But when it came to the truck, only the rider could get close enough. He worked in the lashing rain, undoing the buckles and straps until the saddle slid free. With a final pat against its hide, the beast launched itself into the darkness in search of a much-deserved meal. The rider moved toward the guard until he came into the revealing light of the braziers. They snapped to attention. "Your Highness, we weren't expecting you until the morn." Prince Treus Strand, the eldest son of King Bacchus Strand, regarded the men before him. He drank from their admiration, pouring from the men. Good, he thought. His risk had paid off. He would need the men loyal to him if his mission was to succeed. The prince was tall, but where his father had been worn down by the stress and time of the years, Treus was powerful in body, even still within his early 40s. He cracked a half-smile and clapped the men on a shoulder, his strange eyes alive with mischief. Treus possessed the same eyes that marked him as a Strand, one green and one blue. "Let my father know I've returned." Though it was spring, it was still early, and his breath danced before his shorn face. He looked forward to growing a beard. It was the mark of leadership and command. He instinctively ran a hand over his bare chin, but a few days ago he had stopped shaving. The guards moved to open the thick wooden door, separating the landing from the castle. He stepped through and waited for them to bring a cloak. He pushed back his braided locks from his face and waited. He wore his hair in the wave style of his people, half shorn and half braided. He would keep the style, he thought. Another way to distance his image from that of his father. A steward returned with a cloak and a towel, but he took only the cloak, preferring to keep the salt and waves upon himself, another ploy to garner favor with the guard. Instead, he threw the blue cloak over his green scale armor and made for his father's audience chamber, leaving a trail of the sea behind him.